Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Game. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
We built this city.
Guys, it's cold again. No pressure.
We built this city with the Giants. So build this city. We built this city with the Giants.
Oh, good.
Brandon Buster, Matt Bum, to name a few. Juan Pence, Mays, and Willie McCovey, too. Barry Bonds, Baby Bull, Panda Joe, Robbie Jack and Voach, and JT.
Seriously, if the show had an actual personality, I'd be embarrassed for it. Like, that's
so
that song sounds like a Derek Papa making fun of you song, doesn't it?
That's exactly what it sounds
doesn't
like.
It?
Also, I'm sort of uncomfortable with the way some of those names were casually thrown around together.
Yeah.
Like, there was like a Juan Pence Bonds run, as if Hunter Pence belongs in that. No offense, I love Hunter Pence, but
that's
Juan,
of greatness.
Barry Sean, Barry Bonds, for God's sakes.
So, according to Dieter, Joey Bart is not going to be the savior.
Young Cinderella. He's a Cinderella boy.
Yeah, no, probably not. He's probably right. And slow playing him, if we all agree that this is a... Look, here's the thing. Let's all agree on a couple things real early, and it'll be a lot easier talking about the Giants unless we don't agree on these things. It's a punt year.
It helps that Albie's not here for this.
Yeah, it really does. It absolutely does. It's a punt year. If Zaidi, I think, has been given full permission to punt on the season from a real competitive standpoint. I think he has been handshaked, wink and a smile agreement between him and the brass that your evaluation doesn't begin until this season comes to an end. You're going to get to hand select your brand new, you know, game in, game out manager. And we all know that that's the role that you kind of want to play from the general manager's office anyway. So it'll all fit better just from a communication standpoint in a year from now, and Bochy deserves his year of collecting rocking chairs from every National League team. And however he's going to get ushered out with all the pomp and circumstance, the man deserves it. Three World Series championships. If you want to give him a goodbye summer, you owe it to him. I mean, like, that's kind of how baseball works. It doesn't always go your way in terms of wins and losses. Do right by your history. Doing right by Bochy this year is doing right by your history. Zaidi's best season available is maximum value for Bumgarner. Shed an unsheddable contract or two. Flip Longoria. Get rid of Belt. Figure that out. Move Cueto. Move Samba. However you can. Melanson. Whatever.
Here's what you got to do. The theme for the year should be sell high. The minute anybody on this roster starts doing good things,
right.
Solicit trade offers.
Move it. Move it. I agree totally. And that's not romantic.
No, but
it's not fun.
That's how you get good again.
Yeah. Yeah. And holding on for just the concept of romance is how you get yourself into this situation, by the way.
Somebody brought up the Chicago Bulls earlier when we were talking about the Warriors and did the Bulls ever have those slip-ups. And I brought up an old game log just to look, and I had forgotten because it's incredibly depressing, but they went from 62 wins to like 17 wins when everybody left. And that's what can happen. Same thing happened to the Celtics at the end of Larry Bird. They tried to hold on too long to the end of a bygone era, and it led to a long stretch of really, really bad basketball. Same thing can happen in baseball. The Phillies did this just a few years ago. The Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins era, they held on for dear life. They paid people for past accomplishments, and then the Phillies have been bad until last year, basically.
Totally. Totally. Look. You want to have a really interesting how this all ends experiment? We're about to run one center court at Chase Center.
Yep.
And we're not too many years away from the beginning of this experiment. The beautiful thing is that the strength of Curry and Klay is not airbound athleticism. It's a skill that hopefully the both of them will be able to harness and hold on to for a very, very long time. And they're not just going to come to the end of their championship run and then putter out. It'll be a honestly, you want to know how you want to go out? You kind of want to go out like the San Antonio Spurs are going out. On their shield, not good enough to win a championship, but still good enough to be respected every single minute that you're playing them. And that is ultimately, and boy, is Steve Kerr not the perfect person to be laying the groundwork for this since he is such a Greg Popovich disciple. You know, this is how it all ends. It's going to be fascinating. I mean, it really is going to be fascinating. The ascent of the Golden State Warriors is something none of us could have planned for, no one saw coming, and we could only sort of pick our jaws up off the floor as we watched it happen. We are going to be braced and prepared for the descent, and you can already, you know, you can see certain media members like sharpening their fangs. They can't wait for that moment to come. It's just a weird world that we live in, no doubt about that. But this is, it's going to be fascinating to watch the Warriors stop being the dominant force, go back to just being, you know, to go, they're going to have to go from great back down to good, back down to pretty good, back down to, all right, well, now you're rebuilding for another chapter. And that'll eventually happen.
It likely will, unless you end up being one of those operations that finds a way to string it together. It happens every so often. You mentioned one in the Spurs, and I think we all credit Greg Popovich for that. Obviously, Brady helps, but I think we also would say Bill Belichick has done that. And Bill Walsh got a lot of credit for maintaining greatness through a changing cast of characters, right? And what do all of those guys have in common when we talk about their personnel decisions? They move on too soon rather than too late. With a couple rare exceptions, Tim Duncan, Tom Brady, you move on too soon rather than too late. The Giants have already missed that boat.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Too soon was a year or two ago. Now it's time. You got to move on. There's really not another option.
No. It's the reality that you painted yourself into the corner for to find is now staring you right in the face. And again, if Zaidi can get out of this year maximizing a Bumgarner trade, flipping two untradeable contracts just to get out from underneath them, it will have been an A-plus year as far as your general manager is concerned. Hey, Damon, the Spurs have been good for 20 years. Why can't the Warriors? Look, that's a great question. But, you know, it's what the Spurs have done is not the norm. It's the exception to the rule. It's not the new rule that's now easily laid out for everyone else to follow.
It's almost impossible.
It's almost impossible. But the Warriors, I will give them this. They've got the right coach, and they've got the unselfish superstar to build around that the Spurs enjoyed in their formula. The Warriors are probably more likely to be better prepared to duplicate it than any other team that you could think of.
And a superstar who I think will age gracefully, to your point. That's one of the things about Duncan, not just that he was a good leader, and you know, for years we made a lot of Greg Popovich yells at Tim Duncan like everybody else in practice, and that's why the team is so close, because he lets the superstar, lets the coach, blah, blah, blah. But just as he got older, he wasn't worried about being the center of attention, wasn't worried about scoring the most or anything, except helping the team as much as he possibly could. And I have no doubt that that's how Steph and Klay will both age as time goes on, if they are, in fact, here through their whole career.
888-957-9570. Our next guest coming up a little bit later on this hour, Gary St. Jean stopping on by, brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. That's in about 15 minutes from now. Right now, it's Gianna Franco.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, in about 10, 15 minutes, we're going to say hello to the saintly one. Always good to have Gary St. Jean come around. Talk to him about a very interesting weekend of Golden State Warriors basketball, where they were at their worst before they were at some of their best, without a doubt. 888-957-9570. The Giants got a long baseball season that starts on Thursday. The long season for the A's have obviously already begun. I got a guy here saying, you know, you guys are describing what the A's do and you criticize them to no end. No, this is no. The A's are not the say goodbye 1 year too early rather than 1 year too late. They're the say goodbye to everybody because we can't afford to keep anybody around. There's a huge difference.
The motivation is completely different.
Right. And if the A's had just a fraction of the spending power of a normal major league franchise, the amount of might have been, could have been, would have been that was yours for the taking is enough to, well, it's enough to make me sick. And probably enough to make you sick too. This is Andy in Novato. Andy, you're on 95.7 The Game.
All right, first of all, I don't care how you guys are doing, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Second of all, you know, I agree with the whole theory of, you know, the whole thing you're talking about. But there's a couple outliers. Let me throw a couple quickies out and then the point, and then you can throw me around a little. Number one, Bill Walsh once said the worst move he ever made was letting Ronnie Lott go too early. So it's not always cut and dry, too soon rather than too late. Number two, basketball is so different because there's only five guys, so it doesn't hold water to the conversation. Now, the Giants. Did the Giants hold on too long? Well, they're an amazing three-time world champion because they never had a really good roster. The roster they won with is unbelievably mediocre.
Yes.
So they really didn't have any superstar guys that they could have traded for three or four prospects except Bumgarner after Kansas City. So I don't know if we can blame them because they didn't have a lot of quality to cut loose early and get prospects.
No, look, Andy, you bring up an awful lot that carries water. It really does. They didn't have the golden nickel to flip for, you know, the top three prospects of another system. They probably weren't wired to do that, even if they had that, because that's just not who they are. And honestly, that's not who the vast majority of major league teams should be. When you have a homegrown superstar, you should try to keep them right there at home for as long as possible. Now, when
you know, I just present a devil's advocate argument
well,
to that quickly?
But he is totally right about, you know, the Giants never really planned to go out and win three World Series. It just sort of happened, and it happened with the bare minimum of impressive names and trades and moves. I mean, Marco Scudero and Cody Ross were the answer, not whoever the two biggest names were at the deadline. And it, that
100%.
Yeah.
He's not wrong, but I would just point this out. After 2016, following Brandon Belt's one All-Star appearance, he had just put together 2 years where he was, over the course of that two-year stretch, a .278 hitter with an .852 OPS, playing high-level first base, 35 homers between two slightly less than full seasons, which is not tremendous, but decent, 75 RBIs a year over those 2 years, and, heck, six triples per year over those 2 years. The last 2 years, and by the way, after 2016, you're 2 years removed from your last World Series and looking pretty headed out of contention.
Right.
And Brandon Belt is turning 29 at that point. Now, Brandon Belt is headed into 31, and the last 2 years he's hit .247 with less homers, less triples, less doubles, less RBIs, less production overall, and his defense hasn't been as good. So you tell me, Brandon Belt, was he ever going to get you somebody's top five prospects? No. But was he a guy with value 2 years ago? Absolutely.
He was. And
he's not now.
Yeah, well, especially with the way that you paid him. Now, when you look at, you know, another problem that has put the Giants in the predicament that they find themselves in is that they held on to the clearly wrong idea for way, way too long. Like, loyalty is a great thing unless you get tripped up by it. And the Warriors have been tripped up, or excuse me, the Giants have been tripped up by their own loyalties a couple of times. Gorky's. Look, I'm not here to pick on Gorky's again, but this guy had a 656 on base plus slugging in 451 plate appearances. 656 on base plus slugging, by the way, sucks. I mean, like, so I guess you need to know a little bit more what the. So if you are slugging around 1,000, you're probably leading the league. If you're in that 850 to 900 range, you're probably an all-star. If you are in that mid 8 to low 900 range, you're a real good major league hitter. If you're somewhere in that 750 to 850 range, you're a good major league hitter. And you get under 700, you're leaving average quickly and going down, 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 down. These guys read with, you know, they rolled with the Austin Jackson 604 on base plus slugging, the Gregor Blanco, who was hitting a slash line of 217, 262, 317, and 203 plate appearances last year. Hunter Pence, everyone loved Hunter Pence, which was good because he was hitting 262 with a 332 on base in 248 plate appearances. I mean, they just kept on running out guys that either weren't going to make it or had the best so far behind them for way too long, and that's how they sort of died on the vine while Bobby Evans was flipping whatever budget he had around for Mark Melancon and pitchers who get hurt.
And doesn't that look like what they're doing again this year? Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Joe Panik, Evan Longoria, Brandon Crawford, Chris Shaw, Stephen Duggar, Mack Williamson. That's your starting nine per internet depth charts at this moment, and maybe there'll be a couple shuffles, but literally every single one of those guys, in my mind, is more likely to have a disappointing season than a surprisingly good one.
On Friday, while you were getting married, Joe Shasky was in here, and he basically came to this conclusion. Everybody has a career year, all at the same time. You're maybe a 500 team.
I think you could be better than that if everyone has their best year all at the same time, because I actually think the pitching could be quite good.
Nobody gets hurt. Nobody takes a day off.
The thing is,
everybody plays great. You're around a 500. Best case scenario.
Like I said, I think best case is a little better, but that's almost irrelevant, because here's the problem. It's not, well, okay, we're a little thin at catcher. Buster really has to stay healthy. Okay, we're a little thin at shortstop. We need a good year from Brandon Crawford. It's every single position on the roster, from starting pitching to every single position player. There is no depth.
Right. I got some real questions about your left fielder, your center fielder, your right fielder, your third baseman, shortstop, your second baseman. You're a little light at first catcher, and when you get past the first two guys and your rotation, Drew Pomeranz, anyone?
Yeah. Andrew Suarez, Jeff Samardzija, I mean, take your pick. Now, all those guys are capable of being good. And if, magically, all 25 have their best year, sure, there's some talent here. But the problem is, it's ridiculous to talk yourself into that and then look at the rest of the division and literally every team has more talent. So they do have some margin for error. So yeah, if the other teams have some error and the Giants are perfect, they could be a playoff team. But that's extremely unlikely.
Yeah, very unlikely. This is Brian in Palo Alto. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I just wanted to kind of add on to what you were saying. Is like, until Zaidi, the Giants really didn't have any like real organizational philosophy or discipline about what exactly they were looking for, right? Which I think frustrated fans for a long time, and that's kind of what made the World Series such a delight and such a surprise. But they haven't valued the metrics that basically the best organizations in the league value, right? And that, you know, essentially Sabian's strategy was look on the back of a baseball card, or past performance indicates future success or whatever, right? Which are all ridiculous concepts. And now, you know, they have a guy who has some idea about what he's actually looking for and the types of skills and talents, and man, I'm thankful for it.
Right. It really felt like for a season or two there, Brian Sabian wasn't able to get like the 1998 National League playoff roster off his mind. Like, you know, there was a time where I really thought, you know, he might seriously call Sammy Sosa. I mean, really, like any idea felt like an idea from the past. No one had any confidence to turn the page or let a young kid come up and make his bones. Got a guy here on the text line saying, Damon, so we have the general consensus that the Giants front office has done a pretty terrible job over the last few years ensuring that they stay relevant in the playoff race. Yeah.
Yes.
Like that's why Bobby Evans got fired. The Giants, look, who did the Giants fire? They don't fire anybody. Like, if you got a job with the Giants, you probably have that job for 20 years.
They like to can a trainer when things go really bad.
Right, batting coach, got to go. But, it was a miracle it all kind of happened. There's no doubt that Brian Sabian, even though he had an older touch, for a minute there, it was a magic touch. Bobby Evans comes in, and you'd hope that all the younger, newer age thinking of baseball would have come in with Bobby. It didn't. Bobby was pretty much a copycat of Sabian with less magic dust. Now, we, as far as like people go, I have never, probably never will in my entire life bump into a happier to see you, easier to meet and greet, hey, how are you, Bobby, general manager, than Bobby Evans.
There's only one I can think of, and we're talking to him in a minute.
What a sweet guy. Oh, yeah, yeah. That guy's coming up, too. There's no doubt about it. But he's a sweet guy. I loved Bobby. I wanted it to work because I liked Bobby so much. The Melanson deal, that alone was enough to get fired. That
terrible.
Alone. In the just the vacuum of the Melanson deal, he probably had to go. You look at everything else.
And that's one of those that you feel bad because, frankly, who could have known? The guy was bulletproof for 3 years, and it's just been an epic disaster. But that's part of the risk of being in these big positions in our major sports is sometimes you could do something that ought to have worked out, that seems reasonable, seems like the right thing to do, no reason not to do it, but if it goes as bad as the Melanson deal is gone, then tough, you're out.
It is opening day a little bit later on this week, and we'll get back into Major League Baseball in just a little bit. Right now, you talk about easy to get along with GMs. Oh, we got one here. Former GM, former everything when it comes to the sport of basketball, current NBC Sports Bay Area Warrior analyst, and one of the best friends this show has, Gary St. Jean, on with a little Matt Kolsky and Damon today. How are you, Saintly?
Hey, long time no talk, and Matt, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And it's good to talk to you, as always. We have an interesting weekend of basketball to talk about. The Warriors really, you know, just were terrible, terrible on Saturday and on Sunday. They looked so much like themselves again. I almost think it was almost worth getting through so we could hear from Steve Kerr when he talked about how it really is extraordinary that we avoided a night like this for the better part of 3 or 4 years. And I thought that his perspective that he put on everything after a very interesting weekend of basketball was needed around these parts.
Boy, I triple exclamation point. You're right on, and nobody could have said it better. You know, he's been involved in these as a player with two great franchises, with Chicago and San Antonio, and I love the way he talked about everybody coming after you every game and for 3 years, and you're defending and you're fighting and the mental challenge and the physical challenge, and you know, we didn't have many of these, and It's just part of the psyche that these things happen, and everybody wants to break it down and saying, oh, my gosh, what's going on, and all this kind of thing. Pop and I are sitting there, and I said, Pop, you know how lucky we are? The other 29 teams doing these kind of shows, they have a lot of these. We don't. And it puts things in perspective.
It really was, and you know, they came out and they played a very good game against Detroit. Draymond was on the money. Curry set the tempo, making the shots after getting the night off the night before. And things started finding their own level quickly with Durant basically deciding to jump into the sidecar and come along for a ride. He had 11 assists and only 2 turnovers. He only took 6 shots. And when a guy like Kevin Durant only takes 6 shots, the one thing I can hope is that he told everybody, like, guys, I'm going to be really laying back tonight. If you're expecting me to jack up a lot of these things, I'm not. But I love that Durant did it. He basically put himself on probation because he wasn't happy with the way his jumper was falling.
Well, I just love the way they came out with the energy and the focus and the defense again, kind of similar to the Indiana game. And obviously, Clay and Steph were back in sync and making shots. But Kevin is so skilled, guys, that, you know, if he wants to catch and shoot right away, he had a lot of mismatches. But, you know, he was probing, and he got them into rotations, trying to help when he had a mismatch. And then he was able to find cutters. He was able to find spot-up guys for threes. He was able to find guys in early offense. And that's the beauty of this player. I mean, he can beat you in so many ways. You guys know when he locks in defensively and wants to block shots and get rebounds, there's nobody better in the business. And, guys, I loved the matchup between Griffin and Draymond. You know, there wasn't much talking. They just played. They banged. Draymond was superb. His energy level from defense to offense, his push on the ball for early offense was phenomenal. And then you had to love the guys off the bench. I loved, you know, Livingston, Looney. Those guys did a great job. And, you know, it had, again, like the Indiana game, it had a feel of a playoff game.
You know, you mentioned it briefly there, the Draymond versus Blake matchup, and obviously we got to see it a lot more back when he was a Clipper, and I have kind of forgotten how much fun that is to watch, and I think I had also forgotten maybe just a little bit, and shame on me because I should know better. I've watched Draymond Green's whole college and professional career. The way he was able to battle Blake, especially in the post, Blake Griffin tried bully ball, tried every post move he had, spun both ways, and all Draymond did was keep him in front, never give up an inch, and just, I thought, have one of the better defensive performances we've seen from him this year.
Well, I totally agree with you guys, and the key here is this. You guys know he loves the left side of the floor. You know, this year he's taking threes, he's assisting more, he's leading that team. I think his game has really grown. But when the challenge came right down to it, you know he was going down to that left short box, maybe out 12 feet. And if he didn't try to take you middle right away and spin back to the baseline, he was on the box with his back to the hoop. And then you know that he loves to get left shoulder middle for that running hook shot. And if you can take that away, then he's going to go to the drop step. And Draymond just had a scouting report on him that was great, and he took away his strengths and frustrated him, and I thought that was one of the big keys to the win.
Speaking of scouting reports, Gary, can I get a Zion Williamson and Taco Falls scouting report from you?
Well, Taco Falls, MJ and I were in Orlando last year to see Johnny Dawkins' team play the St. John's, the Johnnies. Mitch Richmond, my son Greg, and Molly there. And, you know, I saw this guy playing, and I kept looking. I said, this guy Manute Bol's son? I mean, it's amazing, guys, how big he is. And he's much more thick. And he has improved so much in a year. I was just happy for the guy. It's just the simplicity of being able to catch and finish, of course, blocking shots and not reaching down. He's improved immensely. And his plus-minus on the floor was fabulous. You know, Williamson is just a unique player. You know, that they were kind of just emphasizing whenever he goes right, he wants to spin back to his left. And it's the quickness of his jump and the power in his game. And, guys, the thing I love about this guy is his smile, his attitude, his happiness for his teammates. He is going to be just a great, great NBA player. Sure, there's things he's got to work on. You know, the jump shot and maybe making some reads, but he shows you glimpses like blocking corner jump shots or getting out on the fast break and throwing a right-handed bounce pass perfectly in time. And that's a special, special player. That was a great, great game that you just put down in March Madness history as really special. And wasn't it cool to watch Johnny Dawkins, Mike Krzyzewski, and then Johnny Dawkins' son? That was, there's a lot of love there amongst those guys.
A lot of generations of basketball as well.
Well, Johnny was supposed to be the heir apparent. He's like, what are you still doing here, Krzyzewski? You're killing me.
While we're talking about number one overall picks, I got to ask you. I know he was the NBL MVP, and he showed up in better shape than last we saw him in the NBA, but are you surprised at how effective Andrew Bogut's been since he showed up with the Warriors this time around?
Sure. You know, guys, when he left, I mean, he was walking around like me. And now, you know, the fountain of youth, you know, he goes on that vegan diet. Andrew now has a wife and two kids, and he's in great shape mentally and physically. And, you know, that season back there, a couple games a week, not a lot of traveling, you know, it keeps him home, and he's just reinvigorated. And, you know, it was perfect timing. Wait till the season ends. You're the only team I want to come to. Give Bob Myers, his assistant, Larry Harris, who drafted him in Milwaukee, credit for, you know, just sustaining a relationship, the contacts. You know, he could have been bitter when they let him go and with a salary cap move so they freed space to get Kevin Durant. But, you know, he's a mature, smart guy, and he loves playing with these guys. And yeah, he gives you 24 minutes last night. How about his coast-to-coast drive with the Euro step and the flip there? He's having fun, and he's a wonderful insurance policy as we go forward down the stretch here into the playoffs.
What's your favorite thing to eat at Lunardi's?
Hey, guys, I was just there today, and I got these Miller's hot dogs. Did you ever have those?
Miller's? No, tell me.
Yeah, they're nice big fat boys.
Ooh,
I really
okay.
like them.
All right.
So I snuck in there. When I walk in Danville, I go to the right. I'm walking past where they're making the sushi. They're baking over there on the other side. They get the deli going. I sneak over to the left. I'm going down past the meat counter, and I get down to those hot dogs. And I'm saying, boy, those guys are going to taste good. So now I got a choice for MJ. She can have hot dogs or whatever else.
That's very nice. Now, they got a casing on it? Got a little snap to them, Coach?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Now, back in Massachusetts, where I go in the summertime to Cape Cod, we have Deutschmachers. And those are the same kind of hot dogs, these big, big ones. I love putting them on the grill, you know. Now, back in New England, guys, we have Goulden's Mustard and Carl's.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Gotta have
the Goulden's. Advertisements for them. And, of course, with Yaz doing them, you had to have that mustard.
Hmm. Gary, you're making us hungry. Thank you, buddy. Gary St. Jean, by the way, when we talk to him, it's brought to you by Lunardi's. Go get yourself, what do you call them, a Miller? Miller hot dog?
Yeah, yeah, man. They're the best, guys.
Quite simply the best. There you go. He even does his own tagline. That's how much we love having Gary on. Thank you, St. Leone. Always a pleasure, my friend.
You're the best, guys. Have a good one.
There he is. Gary St. Jean, Miller's hot dogs, nice snap, Goulden's mustard, everything you need to know. Little footwork on the low block for Draymond.
That brown mustard, though, that's a must-have. You got to have that.
Have you ever been to an Indians game? Cleveland Indians game? No. Have you ever had Cleveland Indians mustard?
I have only watched that godforsaken team in the home of my favorite team, the Chicago White Sox.
I
hope they lose every game from now until the end of time.
The one thing that you just cannot take away from Cleveland is that stupid mustard in their stadium.
Yeah.
That is great.
No, the cities of Ohio generally have one sort of sad food item to represent them. Like that chili they love to talk about in Cincinnati.
Queen City, yeah.
Belongs in the garbage, but the mustard.
No sound effect for Dave Feldhaus.
God, the mustard is good.
888-957-9570 is the number. We've got much more coming up, but we always like to sneak in a little 5 before 5, before we slip into our 5 o'clock hour, and we do that with the one and only Gianna Franco. We do that next here on 95.7 The Game.
Some things you need to know. Some things you want to know. It's 5 before 5 on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome on back. We got stories, some headlines, some deadlines, and some even slip through the cracks. That's why Gianna's here to pick them up and run them past us, Matt Kolsky, Damon Bruce. Welcome back. It's good to have you. Gianna, what you got?
All right, we are brought to you by the California Academy of Sciences. Where else can you visit an aquarium, a planetarium, and a natural history museum all under one roof in one day?
Check it out.
There you go, calacademy.org.
Number one.
Okay, so the NFL is going to break a tradition to honor an even longer one. This just announced today. The league announcing that this year's season opener will feature the Packers and the Bears on Thursday, September 5th. The decision to go. Let's all get into the song. The decision to go with the two of the legacy franchises in the league coincides with the league's celebration of its 100th season. That keeps the defending Super Bowl champs from kicking off the new year, but they will probably do it that next Sunday. The Patriots will play. The opponent, though, has not been announced, which they're probably happy about because it takes a little attention off of the whole Robert Kraft thing right now.
Sure, no doubt about it. By the way, we got to talk about the retirement of Rob Gronkowski. I'm sure we will next hour. But okay, yeah, Bears opening up the season. Bears and Packers, where are they going to do it?
At Soldier Field.
Is that game going to be at Soldier? All right, good. I endorse that. I sign off on it, and you will like it. That is a good rivalry, folks.
It also happens to be two teams that could be really good this year.
Yeah.
This should be a good way to start the season, then.
I have no complaints.
Well, you know, let's see what the brand new look Green Bay Packers look like. Chicago Bears will be going through quite a DNA test now that Vic Fangio is the head coach of the Denver Broncos. A lot to make sure is still shored up on that dominant side of the football. But yeah, Khalil Mack probably hasn't worn down by game one. So
I think he should be fresh.
Yeah, well, yeah, go ahead.
And by the way, if he wants to sit out training camp, no problem with me.
Oh, that's
good with that.
As a matter of fact, I insist on it.
All right.
Number two.
All right, so we'll just touch on it because you guys are going to talk more about it later. But Gronk goes out on top after flirting with retirement last year. Gronkowski walking away from the NFL just before his 30th birthday. All I have to say is maybe timing is everything. Since Patriots owner Robert Kraft remains center stage at the NFL owners meeting, there is no doubt that the timing of Gronk's retirement announcement is kind of helping to ease the whole thing as well with what's happening with Robert Kraft.
Do you need Rob Gronkowski news to distract from your rub and tug controversy?
Rub and tug.
Wow.
That's... Hey, if I had given you odds.
The tug rule.
Robert Kraft and Rob Gronkowski are both in the news.
Right.
One of them is implicated in a rub and tug ring, for lack of a better word. Which one is it?
Yeah, no one would have bet on. No one would have bet on the elder statesman right there. Well, so can I just give you the one idea that I've come up with today? Because Rob Gronkowski, one of the best pass catching tight ends, some of the softest hands a big man has ever had. You saw him making huge plays in the AFC title game and the Super Bowl. Had he not been the oft injured Rob Gronkowski, who knows what he would have been? What he was a premier, one of the best at his position while he played figures in football. Great catching tight end, great blocking tight end. He's a Hall of Fame tight end who won 3 Super Bowls in his 9 years in this league. Gronkowski, for all the jokes and goofing around aside, was phenomenal. And the fact that he got to be the lighthearted fun guy in the least lighthearted, least fun organization there is, I love the guy. Like, Rob Gronkowski is literally the teenage boy next door that's the lovable meathead the entire neighborhood agrees on.
Yes, and you know how good he was because Bill Belichick put up with it for 9 years.
Totally, totally. He wore number 87. I still think they should retire number 69 for Rob Gronkowski.
You think so, in his honor?
It's the best idea I've heard all week.
It's 2019. Who's walking around still making 69 jokes like it's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures trailer? But that guy. I mean, like, it's unbelievable.
A fitting tribute.
It really is.
By the way, Bill and Ted coming out with another movie.
What?
Did you see that?
Doesn't feel necessary.
Does it have the original, not Keanu?
I don't know the other guy's name, to be honest
with
you.
Is he in it?
Yeah, apparently both of them did an announcement online.
George Carlin is unavailable.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Number three.
All right, this could be the best bracket ever, you guys. A person playing in the NCAA's official bracket game may have done what no person has ever done before. They picked every game of the tournament's first 2 rounds correctly. They have somehow managed to pick all 48 games correctly. They'll head into the Sweet 16 with an unblemished record. They're called Center Road. They were entered on the bracket challenge on NCAA.com, and they have the number 1 seed Gonzaga beating number 2 Kentucky in the national championship game. Which, so, after seeing Duke on Sunday, I'm not totally sold on Duke anymore.
There's no way they're going to be El Perfecto at the end of it. The fact that they're still Perfecto up until now is a mathematical near impossibility.
Hold on, though.
The odds of being right through the first 48 games of this tournament are 1,281,474,976,710,656.
Okay, but here's the thing about that. That is the odds of if you picked at random and every game had a 50-50 chance of going either way. So it's close to that. I'm not saying those odds are so far off, but here's what I am saying. Now that we're here, and we look at the bracket and how many favorites are still in it, there's a pretty conceivable path to perfect, isn't there?
Yes, but no.
I mean, those odds.
Mathematical impossibilities should never be dismissed.
But and somebody does occasionally win Powerball.
Yes, but that is a much easier equation than this one. What is amazing about this is somebody is perfect the whole way through it. I hope there are employees at Berkshire Hathaway. Do you know what Warren Buffett does?
You sell the thing now.
Anybody who works at Berkshire Hathaway perfect through the first weekend. Perfect through the first, not need
oh,
to be perfect
really?
The whole way through, but perfect through the first weekend. Gets $1 million a year for the rest of their lives.
Are you serious?
It's never happened.
Wow.
So if this person was Berkshire Hathaway, they're already, you know, ringing in the money.
Doesn't this also tell us how unexciting a tournament it's been?
Yeah. The fact that Cinderella's nowhere to be found has allowed this to happen has pretty much been there. But it still shows you there's only one person in America.
I know, it's amazing.
Only one person who's gotten this far. And that's how impossible the whole thing really is.
I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. Do it all. Cut it all down.
Cut down the nets.
I'll be keeping track of them.
Number four.
I still have Michigan over Tennessee, so my championship game is still alive.
Oh, good. Yes. Good. How's the rest of your bracket looking?
I have the championship game still alive. See, I'm a sucker for Cinderella. I try to look up her skirt everywhere on the bracket. I didn't do it once. No, it didn't work.
I think I'm number two in our intercom bracket.
No,
I feel good about that.
First of all, you don't ruin my moment. You don't think you know. You know you know.
I'm either second or third.
Either.
I can't. I got to go back and look.
Just so much time at the top. I couldn't figure out exactly where I was.
Six brackets going. Had a lot of fun this year with these things. All right. The betting favorites, the NCAA tournament, went on a historic run over the weekend. For the first time since the tournament expanded to 64 teams in 1985, all 16 betting favorites won in the round of 32, which means many of the favorites won in blowout fashion. So 11 of the 16 games were decided by double digits, with North Carolina and Michigan State among five teams that won by 20 or more. So if you were making the bet on the favorites, you got paid pretty well.
Yeah, you absolutely you cleaned up if you just rode chalk in this tournament. And this is normally the worst sporting event in the world in which to roll out that theory, but it's held true this time around. And how ironic that Kansas has nothing to do with the chalk. Thank you. Thank you.
Other than, what was it, Country Road there? You know, it's the only guy who really benefited, I suppose.
That's true. really quick, one more betting nugget here. On March 8th, what may have been one of the greatest parlays wager ever to hit a U.S. sportsbook. This happened in Mississippi. A $25 20-leg bet ended up paying over $104,000.
That's why we parlay.
Isn't that impressive?
Seriously, that's amazing.
God.
By the way, every idiot goes to the sportsbook and plays an 8-team parlay because that's how you win money.
Totally.
Right?
Totally. What could go wrong besides everything early in the day?
I did on $25.
Indiana v. Wichita State. Raymond Ritter and I will have our annual dinner bet whenever. Ooh. And all I can tell you is, Raymond, I remember when this was an NCAA tournament game. I'm old enough to remember that. But, yes, my Hoosiers against his Wichita State Shockers in the quarterfinals of the NIT, the tournament only a mother could love.
Now, do you want to win the NIT or does it not matter?
At this point, sure, you might as well. But if you're asking what would you have rather done, exited in the first round of the NCAA tournament or won the NIT, I would have rather lost in the first round of the tournament than won the NIT.
Okay.
That's who I am. That's who we are. This is why I didn't have a good weekend.
Would you say you want winners? I'm sorry.
Last night, my mother-in-law, very nice. She threw a very nice little birthday dinner for me. And she brought out a little, like, a tiny, perfect to split for the four of us, like apple pie.
Yummy.
Put a candle in it. She said, make a wish. You know, obviously I'm married to her daughter. We have a child on the way. She said, make a wish. So I close my eyes. Right when I'm about to blow out the candle, she's like, it can't be about Indiana.
You're like, well, then.
And I seriously had to make another wish because the only thing I had was please get back in the tournament next year. It's the only, like, I've got a, the child's in utero, wasn't even thinking about it. Wife right there in their dining room. Family, no connection at all.
All about your Hoosiers.
Hey, I knew Indiana long before I met any of these people.
You are such a diehard.
Go
number
Hoosier.
Five.
All right, lastly here, people who have seen Jordan Peele's new psychological horror film, Us.
No.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it yet.
I kind of want to leave the room before you even have this conversation.
This
That's how scared I am.
Really?
I don't like scary stuff,
it's
man.
It's not real.
I don't care.
Okay.
I'm terrified. I can't even watch the preview.
I'm not one of those, I won't watch scary stuff, but I don't think I'm going to see that in the movie theater. I'm going to have to watch it on my couch through my own throw pillows.
You don't want to jump out of your seat with a tub of popcorn and
No.
Well, listen to this. They're actually saying that they're afraid now to go to the Santa Cruz boardwalk with some swearing off the city altogether. Apparently, the film is set in Santa Cruz. A family goes on vacation. A lot of it's done near the boardwalk. And people are tweeting. For example, here's one person on Twitter. You know, I was thinking to myself the other day, I can't wait for summer. I really want to drive to Santa Cruz. But thanks to the movie Us, I won't be visiting Santa Cruz anytime soon. Another person is a student at UC Santa Cruz, was kind of joking, but said they'd actually consider dropping out of school because of the film. So after viewing it, they might not be returning because it was a little bit creepy.
Hey, look, if your city can survive the Lost Boys phenomenon, it can survive this too.
Those are vampires, right? I mean, Lost Boys vampires.
Well, I don't even know what this is.
But Lost Boys were vampires.
Yes.
So you can wrap my head about that not being real. You know, this is like a full-on psychological thriller, crazy.
By the way, you can't watch The Lost Boys and see Corey Feldman and Corey Haim and ever think of them the same way again after you've seen Leaving Neverland with Michael Jackson. Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.